Good day. You're listening to European Buddha.
Warmly welcome. This is Martin from the recording studio. I had the wonderful opportunity to meet Gabriela Frey and Thea Moore and talk with them about Sakyadita, the international network for Buddhist women, and the conference that took place last year in Seoul with a wonderful title, Living in a Precious or Precarious World. During our conversation, we developed the topics further and addressed again the importance of dialogue and dialoguing. To give a perspective here, the EBU is represented in the Council of Europe and there by Gabriela Frey in the Conference for INGOs. Within that, both Gabriela and Thea work in the Committee for Interreligious and Interconvictional Dialogue. What that is and why this is such a key factor in civil society and such a key factor within our European Union, you can find out by listening to today's episode. Enjoy and have a good day. Hello, Gabriela. Hello, Thea. It's very nice to see you. It's wonderful to have you here, finally. Gabriela, it has been a while. You have been on this podcast 2 years ago. Title was Peace, Dialogue and Conflict. Well, still issues that continue to this day, I would say. And Thea, it's wonderful to see you here the first time.
Yes.
Very much welcome. And just to begin with, Gabriela and Thea, you both work in the Committee for Interreligious and Interconvictional Dialogue. Both engage in Sakyadita, the international network among and for Buddhist women that strive to create equal opportunities for women in all Buddhist traditions. And you both share a wide expertise in the field of dialoguing. What would you say is another similarity?
Well, I think Thea and I, we are very long-term friends. And we have actually, our start was working together and really being touched by the aims and visions of Sakyadita. And as Thea is a little longer in Sakyadita International, maybe I would be very interested also if she could share with us how she came to know about Sakyadita and what does it mean.
Oh, yes, this long time ago so happened that His Holiness the Dalai Lama celebrated his 60th anniversary, in New Delhi, and I was accompanied by Champa Tsedron, our common friend, Karola Roloff, and we met there Kamaleksha Tsomo, who was already at that time the president of Sakyadita International, which had been founded in Bodh Gaya at the end of the 80s.
1987.
Thank you. And she told me about the work and about the importance of this work means that she also created the expression Sakyadita, daughter of the Buddha, and she wanted to give importance to especially Asian women who needed to get the same rights than the men. But maybe we can talk later a little bit about this. But I got so curious about the work of all lay women and nuns united in this Sakyadita organization. And coming now to South Korea, it is so fascinating how much this movement has grown within the last 30 or more years already.
Yeah, actually, that is the point. Thea and I, we went there to this last conference of Sakyadita in South Korea in Seoul. Actually, we have to explain maybe that since the beginning, 1987, almost every 2 years, the Satyajita conferences are held in Asian countries every 2 years, and that women and nuns, Buddhist nuns, and coming together to talk about what they have achieved, to share their experiences, to talk about what still needs to be done. And so that is really enriching for everyone who is coming there. And when we were now attending this last conference in summer last year, in like in 2023, sometimes I said, "Please, Thea, pitch me." I cannot believe what I'm seeing, because that was so wonderful to see how much energy and how much achievement has been accomplished throughout these years, that it was really heartwarming. There is the full ordination for Buddhist nuns in the Mula Savastavada tradition. They were, for example, in Bhutan. Then they also engage in combating domestic violence on very high level in Australia. The list is long of what has been accomplished.
The title of the conference is a very lovely one, Living in a Precious or Precarious World. You just leave out two of the letters and you have precious or precarious. And I'm wondering, after you attended this conference and you heard various contributions from women that showed what great determination Buddhist women need to, for example, attain full ordination or to live up against the resistance of Sangha, of the society. What was your inspiration after this conference, having heard these various stories that were about persistence, solidarity, and support?
My feeling is that, well, we often hear in the teachings that our enemies are our greatest masters. And sometimes, due to a precarious situation, you develop somehow a wish to overcome it. And what can really teach you many things are this, when you are with in a solidarity with others, and then you get encouragement, and then you can start thinking about your precarious situation. And when you have role models, if you have good examples, and said, "Oh wow, she has learned, she is now a teacher, she is now a professor, she is now a nurse, or whatever, or she is a Dharma teacher, or whatever." That shows, yes, it is possible. And when I was starting to set up, helping set up the nonary of the Sakya tradition in India, I have observed how often young girls, when they came into the nonary, they were very shy, they didn't dare to talk. And it was really, I remember Jetsun Ma Tenzin Palmo, when she was always saying to these young girls also that, "Hey, you have the Buddha nature in your in your heart. Show it. And you need to learn. You need to don't be shy." And she scold them sometimes even. And it is so important that we overcome our learned habits, and we always have to really clearly see, is this a bad habit to leave behind or a good tradition to be kept? And so whenever we go for that, and we learn, we need role models and those who have gone this way, and then I think that is very helpful.
May I add something concerning our contribution at the conference? We also took the opportunity to talk about the precarious situation of nuns in the nuns and lay persons, but particularly nuns in the West. In traditional Asian Buddhist communities and societies, it is very accepted, very much accepted, that the nuns can go for alms, and they can get their food and everything. So we don't have such a highly respected tradition, not in the West. And for all those who intensely want to occupy themselves with Buddhism, it is very difficult to make up their livelihood and to get some funding for them to stay in meditation and analysis and whatsoever. And it was very interesting that one of the Asian organizers of the conference was saying, "Oh, this is very interesting for us in Korea. We would also like to support our sisters in Europe by finding or by installing kind of good infrastructure so that they can also live as nuns are supposed to live." So we came home with a lot of inspiration.
So for me, what the conference was also about was to put emphasis and awareness for women rights in general. So it's not only about ordained nuns. So it was also addressing one key problem we still face in our so-called modern world. That is that at all levels, we have worldwide violence against women, and they are increasing, and it remains a problem. And this conference had also time to highlight good approaches in this regard. So, and there was Australia that launched a campaign to avoid violence in the family and against women in Buddhist communities.
Actually, in Australia, they call it family violence. Here in Europe, we talk more about domestic violence. And it is that the Australian government, if I understood well, it was in the region of the state of Victoria. They wanted to really address this increasing domestic violence in. And they also asked representatives of different religious leaders to think about how, from their angle, they could help combating domestic violence. And then Sakyadita Australia was involved, and they have started a really good campaign together with the other representatives of religions and beliefs. And they have really launched a very large campaign of training religious leaders, of producing all kinds of teaching material and meetings. And it was very impressive to see how deep they went into the subject and how, from a religious leader's point of view, one could help overcome that. We have to bear in mind that nowadays we are talking about that every third day a woman dies out of violence from a close partner, friend, husband. And it is really something, a phenomena which we really have to address. And we are always overwhelmed with our daily work, and we rarely want to really go in deep into that. I've heard about that in France. They have started now a smaller, similar attempt to address domestic violence against women. But I think that is one of these big issues we really have to address, and it is urgent, especially in times of war and conflicts we are facing nowadays. This is an issue we need definitely to address. And that was also one of these reasons why already in 2008, Sakyadita members thought we need to work on European level. And we have introduced or helped introduce the participatory status for the European Buddhist Unions to the Council of Europe in Strasbourg. And we have worked there with many others on issues like human rights and religion and other issues.
Last time we spoke about the Council of Europe, Gabriela, it was from the last podcast, and it was within the background of the Ukraine crisis. As the crises are continuing on various levels to this day, other urgent matters remain the same. So let's maybe talk about the Committee for Interreligious and Interconvictional Dialogue.
Maybe I have to say a word about interconvictional,
Yes.
because people, they just say, there is the word, English word, conviction. I'm convinced about certain values, and we have less than half of our society which is not saying, I'm not religious, I have a certain spirituality, I'm humanist, I'm philosopher, whatever. And what is so urgent, and what we are emphasizing on since the beginning of our talk, is that dialogue is so important. And we need to dialogue in order to address all these different difficulties we have, and the violence, and all these issues. And we need to talk. And if we exclude an interreligious dialogue everyone who's not Christian, Muslim, or Jewish, then we have a big problem, because that means that is almost half of our society. Even though Buddhists are a part, we are a minority religion, and sometimes we also got for, we are forgotten in to get included in some interreligious dialogue. And I think it is so important that this dialogue needs to be opened. So there are lots of young people who have and experienced people who have introduced this idea and concept of interconvictionality. That means it's just a real broader form of a dialogue. And when we started this to propose this Committee for the Interreligious and Interconvictional Dialogue, it was meant to really address everyone.
I mean, inter-religious dialogue or also interconvictional dialogue happened since decades already. But the outcome so far is not too productive, one may say, because still we have old structures and we have also a kind of male dominance in this interreligious dialogue. And what we are striving for and what distinguishes us maybe from other interreligious groups is that we are trying to have not only dialogue in harmony, we are also prepared for discourses which might be or which could also be some struggles, but trying to find and to create together new solutions. Yeah, this is what we think what should matter in the future. It is not enough to shake hands and say, oh, we are good friends, we had dinner together and we exchanged good ideas. We really have to work on the level of racism, how to overcome it, and we have to name the problems that we are facing in others and also in ourselves. Yeah, if only the others would be racist, then there could be a simple solution. We also have to clarify that in ourselves. This is one aspect which I really admire in this committee, and also very surprising is the interest, as you mentioned already, Gabriela, of young people who are not very much satisfied with the traditional religions, who are still in their personal search. What does it mean, spirituality? in my life? How does it express? How can it express? And maybe I could take something from Christianity or from Judaism and from Baha'i or whatever, and opening up the floor.
Yeah. We have a phenomenon nowadays due to internet that people are in their bubbles, in their internet bubbles, and they speak amongst those who are of the same opinion. And what is now really a challenge is to get these bubbles a bit to meet, get them popped. You know what I mean? That they burst and that they mingle and that they exchange and. That is something which is so important, and what is also what we really love in the work and of our committee is that we have people from all corners of Europe, from France, England, East and Western, and these are all delegates of greater religious or faith-based organizations, and they are experienced and they see the problems. And what really is so I think important is when all these different representatives of religions, beliefs, and convictions, they work together on a common issue, then sometimes you just forget that the other is a Jewish, that the other is a Muslim. You just have the same problem. You see the human being in the other, and then as human beings, we are trying to find a solution together. And that is, I think, extremely important that we work more closely all together. Because we see also right now with the conflicts in the Israel-Palestinian conflicts, this is somehow intermingled also with religious problems and non-dialogue, and we really need to see the human beings in others. And for example, the vice president of the committee or co-chair is Lilia Benzendrine. She organizes something incredible and interesting. It's called Les Sacrées Journées, somehow holy days or sacred days. This is a festival where, for example, we have Christian choirs singing in a mosque, or we have Buddhists praying in the cathedral. You know, it is like bringing over an exchange of what we have of sacred expressions like our music to the others. And then that makes the other feel, wow, that touches them. And it's beyond words. And this is a form of communication which is really, really wonderful. I can really suggest everyone who can to come and see that once a year in Strasbourg. That's just one example.
Yeah, I think the idea of dialogue you both just presented is very wide and must be very provocative to some extent. Because if you open so much, what about your identity, about being a certain believer or a certain da-da-da? So it's very interesting. And what you just told us, Gabriela, I think it's key that we focus on what. Do we want to achieve together to the outcome? What want we want to accomplish? For example, peace. And in that sharing, I think religions find very, and people who have convictions find very easily common ground. But as we, when we have too much emphasis about identity, I'm not sure we are stuck.
Yeah, actually, when we have someone who's quite extremist in front of us, we just try first of all to really come to a very easy common ground. Everybody will agree that everything is changing, everything is progress. There's nothing which really there's not everything is really moving. So identity is also a process. So if you really try to talk to people, said, okay, you've say I'm of this religion, I have this belief, said then, But have you always been like that? Is there maybe a reason why you really hold on this form of belief or this conviction or this form of violence or what or that you need to destroy the other, you know, this extremist wish that one has. And then often, if you dig a little bit deeper, you can see that it is often something to do with being afraid of change. And that if you have in a dialogue this point, then it also is something that it needs courage to see that the dialogue, when you open up and have dialogue with that, the other will, of course, change something within yourself. And this is a very delicate moment, so it needs time. Dialogue needs a secure place. It is needs time. And it's maybe a bit challenging to put dialogue within a governmental structure like, for example, the Council of Europe or the European Union. But I think there is no other way around. And we have to, from the governmental side, need to put into place good dialogue formats and be as democratic and as open and inclusive as possible.
Yes, Thea, you also have quite a expertise in that as an academic researcher and also as a former director of the Diakonie in Germany, where you also encountered the topics of intercultural dialogue. What are your insights in this regard?
In fact, you are referring to my research work, which was identity and emptiness, and being two keywords of Eastern and Western philosophy. So, in our Western context, we're talking about identity as something that develops in freedom and with the consent of the personality. And on the other hand, in Eastern thought, shunyata or emptiness means the fluidity of this identity. And in a way, we are living in a tension of, or this is kind of polarity. Of those two keywords as identity, we can grasp, we can refer to, we find our relation to ourselves, to others, and to the spiritual powers. And in Eastern thought, we learn that all this is in a flow and is not something that could be grasped on it. And I love this tension, being in this tension, being aware that once I'm on one side of the pole, I also have to consider the other side. And maybe it is also our wish to open up this important East and Eastern and Western thoughts to as many people as possible and find finally inner peace and harmony. And that is also my experience when I was working for the Diakonie in Frankfurt with the Buddhist background, even though that was a Protestant, is a Protestant organization, it is universal. The teachings are universal. It doesn't matter whether you belong to this or that confession. And that is also why I find it so important that young people come to our events and talk to us because what we need in my idea for the future is we need to get in touch with our common ground, even though that we have a lot of diverse interests and that we also accept or love diversity. So in giving liberty to everybody is only possible if one is grounded in oneself and can accept other views as well. That was also one of our webinars that we were doing on identity formation. Only if, that was just a summary, only if you are well aware of your own identity, you can accept other positions. And knowing how they grow, there could always be another possibility that it is going in a different direction.
Maybe I would like to add that, for example, in Seoul, at the Saketita conference, I once again realized how closely impermanence, resilience, and awakening are interconnected. The Buddhist perspective teaches us about impermanence and interdependentness. Our human existence and our environment are precious, and it is in our mutual interest to consciously and lovingly care for others every day. If we endeavor to live this way of life together, step by step, it will increase our solidarity with all people, regardless of gender, because we need to free ourselves from our mental, gender, or other prisons. And this enables us to be more resilient in the face of adversity and leads to a comprehensive awareness and ultimately to awakening.
I just had this similar idea that it was a very, very wonderful subtitle to this conference. So, living in a precious or precarious world. Then there were these three words: impermanence, resilience, and awakening. Very wonderful conclusion that sums it pretty much up. So, it's really about humanity and addressing core principles of our society. Within that dialogue, dialogue, and dialogue. And you both are very great examples in that.
I think what is so important is this interconnectedness, because if Dalai Lama has resumed that in one of his talks in the European Parliament, he said an intelligent egoist is thinking of others more than about oneself, because he knows that whenever all other peoples are feeling well, then indirectly he feels, or he she feels well as well, you know. So it's all about being intelligent, egoist.
Coming almost to an end of this encounter today, Thea and Gabriella, I just in the beginning introduced to you as a team. You worked for some years together. So, anything you would like to share or highlight for the audience to know or to get inspired to, please feel free to just say something.
I think Sakyadita, one has to know that Daughters of Buddha does not exclude men. What we really would like to do is that find like-minded human beings in order to really work for gender balanced, religious balance, whatever, you know, that we find really a good this good middle way in order to live more in harmonious ways together. And I just can really encourage everyone, just whenever you feel like your heart is getting a bit dense in front of someone you don't know, you don't understand, or is frightening or whatever, just take a good breath and then to say, okay, that is also a human being, and this person, like myself, wants happiness, wants to be happy, wants to avoid suffering. This is our common ground. And then this gives you the little moment not to get trapped into your habits and get into any reactivity you might then be unhappy about later.
I just would like to make it very short. I do hope that There will be a lot of opportunities to spread the ideas of Saccadita to others who are interested in this field. And I also do hope that our work, especially yours, Gabriela, at the Council of Europe, will be fruitful and will also spread in the near future and also in the long run.